Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Canto 6, chapter 18, verse 75. We're going to finish the chapter. Where did Daito Prabhu go? Well, anyone like to lead the chanting? Because I only had 13 hours to prepare. I was known at the... Yeah, can you lead the chanting? Pretty much everything. The microphones, can you give them a mic? So, thank you.
Arat yatma pradam devam swatmanam jagat ishvaram kol vrinita gunas parsam udasyan narake piyat Aradhyatma pradam devam Swatmanam jagadishwaram Ovrinita gunasparsam Budhasyan narake piyat Aradhyatma pradam devam Swatmanam jagat ishvaram Kovrinita gunasparsham Budhasyan narake piyat.
We'll be doing a word-for-word translation in a moment. Daito Prabhu.
Aradhya. After worshiping. Atma Pradam. Who gives himself, Devam, the Lord, Svatmanam, the most dear, Jagadishvaram, the Lord of the universe, Kaha, what Vrinita would choose. Gunasparsham, material happiness. Buddha, intelligent person. Syat, is. Narake, in hell. Api, even. Yat, which. Translation: the ultimate goal of all ambitions is to become a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If an intelligent man serves the most dear Lord, who gives himself to his devotees, how can he desire material happiness, which is available even in hell? Purport: an intelligent man will never aspire to become a devotee to achieve material happiness. That is the test of a devotee. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches, Nadhanam Najanam Nasundarim Kavitam Va Jagadish Kamaye Mama Janmani Janmanishpare Bhavatad Bhakti Rahitukitvaye. O Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor do I desire beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. A pure devotee never begs the Lord for material happiness in the shape of riches, followers, a good wife, or even mukti. The Lord promises, however, yoga kshemam vahamyaham, I voluntarily bring everything necessary for my service. Let us finish reading the chapter because there's just two more verses without purports. Three. Text 76. O my mother, O best of all women, I am a fool. Kindly excuse me for whatever offenses I have committed. Your 49 sons have been born unhurt because of your devotional service. As an enemy, I cut them to pieces, but because of your great devotional service, they did not die. Text 77, translation, Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, Diti was extremely satisfied by Indra's good behavior. Then Indra offered his respects to his aunt with profuse obeisances, and with her permission he went away to the heavenly planets with his brothers and the roots. 78, my dear King Parikshit, I replied as far as possible to the questions you have asked me, especially in regard to this pure, auspicious narration about the Maruts. Now you may inquire further, and I shall explain more. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 6th canto, 18th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Diti Vows to Kill King Indra.
Hare Krishna, thank you. Om Agyan Samanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Shakshumalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitanya Nambutsale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dedati Swapadantikam Vanchana Kapaturubhya Shah Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavinebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadahara Shri Vasari Gopatabinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, everyone. Thank you for coming. I have a confession. This might be a terrible class, but it doesn't really matter. It gave me opportunity to be humble because I was told maybe like 13 hours ago that there was no one to give the class, and so I'll just try to do my best, and I'll let a little secret out. Daita Prabhu was going to give everyone actually the opportunity potentially to eventually come and give class, because that'll enable people to give use to it. Eventually we all have to give class. It's not that we should be dependent on one or two people, and then if they get sick, it's like we're scrambling. And so kind of that's what our situation is right now. So luckily you all get a chance to embarrass yourself too. So just FYI. So I would first like to take this opportunity to ask for the blessings of all the simple devotees, especially guys, and especially Jitendriya Prabhu, even though he's not currently assembled right here. when I said I was going to give class maybe a week ago, he gave me the biggest smile, actually. So I consider him, I've spent a lot of time with him over the last, 8-9 years, and this is no secret, I consider him one of my primary shiksha gurus. Aside from my brother, my mom, probably my first ones, and especially Jitendriya, currently. So, where was I going with this?
What did I write there?
All right, forgive me. I didn't have no time to prepare, so I'm trying to look at my notes. Oh, yeah, okay, cool. So it's generally said that we become like the persons, places, and things we associate with naturally. So the example usually given I gave last time, maybe a week ago, is that an iron rod, although it's metal, it tastes on the nature of fire when it associates with fire. So similarly in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's famously said, sadhu sangha, sarva shashri khoi, lava matra, sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoi. Even by one lava matra, one moment's association with a pure devotee, one can attain all perfection. So, of course, over the years, I've had many moments with Jitendra Prabhu, as I was mentioning before, is that I like to think my spiritual life is, you know, is progressive. And hopefully that's the case. And so one thing, suppose somebody insults me. They say, you act just like Jitendra Prabhu, because we've all had Jitendra Prabhu association over the years. He may, do things that, you know, we may not consider, you know, the standard of a devotee, like cursing. So suppose someone said, you act just like Jitendra, but they said it as an insult. For me, I would consider it the greatest compliment, because the reason is because, as explained in this famous verse in this pasana, it says, Narayana Pada Sarve Nakutashana Bibhyati Swarga Pavargana Dakeshu Apitulyata Darshanaha. That whether someone insults me or compliments me and accuses me of acting like Jitendra, I consider it the same. So devotees and the great sages throughout history, it doesn't matter which situation comes upon them, whether they're suffering or whether they're happy, they all consider it the mercy of the Lord. So for me, from my perspective, whether someone accuses me of acting like Jitendra, you know, as an insult or a compliment, I consider it all the same. So we're all very blessed to have his association. He's been serving Kishore Kishorty for the last 40 years, completely dedicated. Where were we 40 years ago? You know, we weren't even born, or most of us was toddlers probably. So we should try to understand that if Jitendra Prabhu is pleased, then we should all know for certain that Kishore Kishorty is pleased. So with all due respect to you guys, I appreciate all your encouragement. All you guys are always encouraging to me. But suppose nobody else encouraged me. If only Jitendra encouraged me, that's all that would matter. And I would know that personally, Kishore Kishorty is pleased. But if we look at Jitendra's life, he's always glorifying devotees behind their backs all the time. So it's not just me. We should all know that Kishore Kishorty is pleased because he's always glorifying every single devotee in the temple all the time. So we should all be, take advantage of his. So I'm kind of glad he's not right here at the current moment. So he may blush, or I don't know what he'll say. But basically, there was one thing he told me a few years ago, is that he said, as far as astrology is concerned, he said, one astrologer said that he's supposed to leave his body at 70 years old. So he's 64 now, and he'll be 65 in May. And so that's like 5 years. Of course, astrology doesn't determine our destination. You know, ultimately Krishna does. But at the same time, if it's true, you know, then we should all take advantage of, you know, someone who's been completely dedicated to Kishore Kishorty, you know, temple his whole life. And so although he may not externally appear like a devoted, that's my whole theme, is that we shouldn't have a fixed conception of what a devotee looks like, acts like, talks like. And this is very Satya and John. It all depends on the consciousness. Everything depends on the consciousness. So I just like to offer my, you know, gratitude to Jitendra. Otherwise, you know, without his mercy or in the mercy of you guys, ultimately, then there's no possibility for anyone to advance in Krishna consciousness. I mean, I'm sure you have guys all have experience of someone who elevated you in your spiritual life that you're deeply indebted to, that brought you to Krishna consciousness. So we should always keep these things in mind, people who are working behind the scenes in our life to always bring us to Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we'll become ungrateful and, you know, eventually start to lose respect for devotees if we don't keep these gratitude and humility points in mind, the devotees who always play pivotal roles in our life to make us advance in Krishna consciousness. So now I'd like to take this moment to explain a little few of the points, same points that I mentioned maybe last week. So in Prabhupada's purport of chapter 2, verse 25, he said it's sometimes necessary to repeat points over and over again, you know, to understand the subject matter thoroughly. So I'd like to repeat some of the same points. But before I do, I would kind of like to ask you guys to kind of send your You could say prayers, you know, out for Vishwakarma Prabhu. You guys may not know, he was in the hospital recently for a procedure to prevent a heart attack. And sometimes we may not see, you know, devotees behind the scenes, but they're the ones who's, the devotees who are usually behind the scenes are the one that keeps the show going. But they never, you know, look for any prestige, any acknowledgement. Like, just like this verse says, Nadanam Najanam Nasundadim Kavitamba Jaga Ishikamaye. You know, in this material world, we're all looking for followers or, you know, or prestige, some type of prestige or wealth. But the devotees who are always behind the scenes, you know, they never, you know, say, you know, I'm doing all this service, you know, can you acknowledge me? And so it's very essential to offer our gratitude and respects to people in prayers, especially when they're in their time of their greatest need. I remember last year, somehow or other, we were picking up someone at the airport, and then Himanshu said we have to pick Vishwakarma Prabhu up. And so then when Vishwakarma Prabhu was in the car, he was explaining some procedure. It sounded like pure hell. So we should all understand, you know, learn from the experience of others that this material world is not a happy place. It's pure, unalloyed hell. It's very miserable. And so we should always keep every devotee in our mind and our prayers, especially when they're in a time of, you know, greatest difficulty. And so so this goes to some of the points I was making last week. One verse I quoted from the Bhagavatam, chapter, Canto 3, chapter 30, verse 1, it says, as a mass of clouds does not know the powerful influence of the wind, a person engaged in material consciousness does not know the powerful strength of the time factor by which he is being carried. And so there's also a similar verse in the Bible that I like appreciate. It's in the book of James, chapter 4, verse 14. It says, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. So along these points, the reason I brought this up is because you all guys could keep in mind a rhetorical question that I like to ask myself that I came to this conclusion is that basically suppose you guys knew it was your last night on earth. Would you be content at the way you treated others, especially devotees? So you guys can ask that for yourself. And these points are always nice to keep in mind because I've come to the realization that if we always think in these terms, then our relationship with devotees, all devotees, will become more deeper and meaningful. And the things we generally hold most sacred to our hearts, like fault finding, criticizing, or gossiping about others, becomes more and more meaningless. So I ask you guys, especially, I remember Steve raised his hand that, you know, I like to gossip too. He raised his hand. I think a few people other. Now I love gossip, but just like this verse says, nadanam najanam nasundarim, money, you know, fame, women, or for women, maybe Justin Bieber. these things are like candy. This gossip and these material things are like candy. They're sweet at first, but they have no nutrition. They give no satisfaction. So we could see in the material world that even if you're the most richest person, the most beautiful person, or whatever, you have so many material opinions, you can see that they're all lonely. Why? Because everyone's around them, you know, for some material motivation, either sex or money or whatever. So actually, despite having an entourage of people around them, they're actually completely lonely. So we should always keep these in mind and not go after these things unnecessarily, because ultimately, they're like candy, like a kid eating a lot of candy. You know, it seems good at first, but eventually it's to his detriment. It's detrimental to his health. So we should always keep these points in mind. And excuse me one second. So this brings up the point, a couple of stories that I explained last week also to keep these points in mind is that in my brother's Krishna consciousness, I like to explain these points again because everyone wasn't here last time, and these points are really essential to repeat over and over again. So I'll repeat a couple of stories this time. In my brother's Krishna consciousness, when he first came to the temple, there was this one devotee who was guiding him, basically, who acted as his Shiksha Guru. His name was Revati Nandanam Prabhu. So all the time, I wasn't coming to the temple so much, but when my brother would come home and explain about this devotee, he would always have, you know, something, you know, some complaints about him, you know, naturally. You know, of course, we don't like the discipline. Of course, in retrospect, he appreciated the discipline, but, you know, naturally, we don't like to be told what to do, you know, even though it's for our benefit. Like, a child doesn't like, you know, his mother to tell him what to do. So he was always complaining about this devotee. One day, his mentality just completely changed. He came to me one day and just started glorifying him. And I was like, Like, this is Twilight Zone. I'm like, we're changing your mentality. And so he actually said that they watched the entire Prabhupada Acharya series, you know, the whole day. And I haven't seen the Acharya series, the whole thing. But presumably that takes maybe like 10 hours to watch. 10, I don't know how long, maybe a long time, all day pretty much. And he said after they watched that, their gratitude for Prabhupada, his sacrifice, the sacrifice of devotees increased. It always goes to the point of humility and gratitude, you know. You know, why are we complaining so much? You know, Prabhupada sacrificed his life. You know, the devotee sacrificed his life just to give us, and we can't, you know, forgive each other or tolerate each other. So Jesus was crucified. I mentioned this point again. Jesus was crucified, but he still had the power to forgive. But if what do people crucify us with? Words or judgments and glances. And what do we crucify people with? Words and judgments or glances. Our situation is not as difficult or, you know, as difficult as all the saints throughout history. And so what do we have to be upset about or ungrateful for? Our situation is not as bad as all of them. So these are some of the essential points I wanted to mention. As far as Jitendra Prabhu, there's a very interesting story he told me maybe like a month ago. I hope that's not him right now. He explains to me that one winter, it was approximately around 1998, and so it was a bad winter. And so, of course, you guys know those two towers outside, those ventilation towers, you know, outside the tower building. So those, the wind actually blew those towers down, and it completely broke into pieces. They're actually screwed together like 5 feet sections, and they're screwed together all the way up to the top of the roof. And those came down, and somehow or other, Jitendra was, you know, mainly working by himself. You know, of course, normally that's probably why he's, you know, stayed so long. His humility and gratitude has kept him in, you know, Krishna consciousness for over so long, you know, always tolerating his situation despite, you know, lack of help. Even I don't like to help him a lot of times, so I'm like, no, please get someone else. I even say that to him all the time, but he's never resentful or like you're falling, Prabhu, you know, why don't you do some service? He's like, oh, okay, well, no big deal. He always lets it go. So I kind of like to admit some of my ungratefulness and, you know, and lack of humility. But so anyways, back to this story. Basically what happened was these things broke into pieces, 5 pieces. So he had to put them back together. So he went on the roof and he had his, one of the pieces, the 5-foot pieces tied to his arm. And it was cold outside. He didn't have any gloves. You know, I don't know why. But basically, long story short, somehow or other, it slid down and was pulling him off the roof. It was literally sliding him off the roof, and he had to grab onto the edge of the roof, and it was completely wrapped around his arms. And so it was over the 5-foot, you know, piece was over the roof, and it was going to drag him over if he didn't have his right hand or to hold him up on the roof. So basically what happened next was that Jitendra, he was used pretty much every curse word in the book. He was like, you know, crap, 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 you know, explicit. And then he realized that nothing was happening. So then he started, you know, begging for Krishna's help. He was like, please, Krishna, help me. He just started begging for his help. And somehow or other, the rope came, you know, loose. And luckily he survived for our sake. And he had to go to the hospital because he had a little frostbite on his hand and stuff, and the circulation was cut off, obviously. The whole point I'm explaining to these stories is that the same question I asked you guys before, if we knew it was our last night on earth, or if we knew it was a devotee's last night on earth that we was criticizing and judging, would we be content with ourselves? No, we wouldn't. We probably couldn't even forgive ourselves. No, so we always have to keep this mind, this gratitude of every single devotee that we come in contact with. Otherwise, you know, our Christian consciousness is going to be ruined, you know. We'll never be happy all the time, you know, just always, you know, fault-finding, criticizing. So we should always be grateful, because at any moment, we could go any moment. We shouldn't be so delusional to think, you know, we're not going to, you know, die tomorrow. It's very possible, so. And so those are a couple of points I wanted to mention. So this brings me to another point I mentioned to you guys several times before, something that very much inspired me by this Christian preacher. He said, do we ask ourselves every day, have I gone out of my way to honor someone, compliment someone, or make someone feel good about their day? Because as far as people's qualities are concerned in general, We're very quick to express the negative, and we withhold the positive. We should be the exact opposite, generous with our compliments and stingy with our complaints, free with the honor and withhold the dishonor, because there's enough gossip, slander, and talking badly behind people's back. Let's develop the habit of talking good behind people's back. Why? It's a universal principle. As you sow, so shall you reap. The more we encourage others, the more we'll be encouraged by others. But the more we discourage others, you know, due to being influenced by the material energy, either through envy or pride, we think we're better than someone, then, you know, naturally that'll come back to us. It's a universal principle that's described in every, you know, single religion. It's natural. So the more we encourage and uplift people, even though it's, see, that's the thing about uplifting people. So I would like to briefly explain, you know, some of the people that kind of encouraged me. I actually didn't want to be up on this Vyasa sign. I actually said no several times, but a couple of people that play key roles in my life are Daisa Prabhu and Paramakuru, and they encouraged me to come up here. Even though I don't have confidence in myself, I still don't. This is like a nightmare, but anyway, the service has to be done somehow or other. But anyway, my whole point is that we always need both sides, devotees who are encouraging to us, especially when we're not... don't have any confidence in ourselves. The more we encourage others, especially devotees who don't have confidence in ourselves, then we should feel, you know, that even sense of deeper gratitude to share that encouragement with others. Because we could see that a lot of devotees, they don't have the encouragement. They're shy, you know, they can't, you know, shy for whatever reason, you know, they're scared. I'm scared too. I don't like being up here, but the more you encourage devotees that don't have the confidence in themselves, then the more Krishna's pleased. When he sees that you're, you know, encouraging devotees, you know, not just devotees who don't have confidence in themselves, but also devotees who do have confidence in themselves. Because usually when we see that devotees have confidence in themselves, there's potential that we may become envious and accuse them of being proud. And that's the danger of, you know, we're at the threshold of Vaishnava Parad. You know, there's nothing worse than, you know, Vaishnava Parad. It ruins your spiritual life. So those are the central points of... particularly appreciate it. This reminds me, of course, I mentioned this last week as well. Ramaprabhu, I appreciate one point he made. He gave the example of a bouquet of flowers to explain the principle of unity and diversity. So a bouquet of flowers, what is the unity? The unity is that they're all flowers. And what is the diversity? They're all unique flowers. So the thing I like about this is that reminds me of a section in Uddhava Gita, chapter 2, where the example of the honeybee is given. A honeybee does not discriminate between one flower and another. It takes from the flower the essence, namely the honey. In much the same way, a devotee takes the essence of his association with all other devotees, namely that we're all humbly trying to serve Krishna to the best of our ability. You know, so we may be proud. We all have our faults. I was just walking, came to the temple just now, and downstairs, Mother Rasika Manjari and Mother Maria, they were actually listening to a lecture by His Holiness Ramaprabha Maharaj. So I'm not sure if they remember this point that he was mentioning. He mentioned that, do you know anyone in all creation who has no faults? No. No one. Can you guys all say you're faultless? Any volunteers? How many of you have faults? Let me put it that way. Oh, thank you, everyone. So how can we unnecessarily criticize and judge people if we also have faults? That's how you could develop this humility. But the thing about Maya is, and I was explaining to some devotees, it's not me, I'm also the same way. I'm here to explain some of the mistakes I made in Krishna consciousness. So this is obviously no particular judgment. I have no right to judge because I also have faults too. The fault, one of my faults is that I actually accepted, you know, coming up here. But anyways, we all have faults. So if someone is proud, who cares? If someone is envious, who cares? We have all been proud and envious before. So why are we, you know, unnecessarily getting on a case? Is that we all, so the example that Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives, he gives a perfect example. I'll explain two examples that I like to keep in mind all the time, every day. He explains that just as a doctor tolerates all the offenses of his sick patients, In much the same way, those who are practicing Krishna consciousness should tolerate the offenses of others. Why? Because we're contaminated by most of material nature. It's not that others are just contaminated by most of material nature. We're also contaminated by most of material nature. So if we're getting upset if someone offends us, then that means there's some contamination in our heart. Have you ever known a doctor? Suppose a child tells a doctor, "You stupid idiot." And have you ever seen a doctor accuse a child, "No, you're the stupid idiot. You know, if you say that again, you know, I'll punch you." Have you ever seen that phenomenon before? No, it sounds ridiculous, but that's exactly our scenario. So we should all know that for certain that we're in an apprenticeship division if we're getting upset. You know, we haven't come to the stage of, you know, a proper doctor. Of course, even if you come to the stage of doctor or Vaishnava, you know, that doesn't mean you're not going to make mistakes. But the whole point is that, you know, to be humble essentially means that to admit one mistakes and not to always, you know, find fault with others. And so these are points we always have to keep in mind, and they keep us humble, which is the most essential foundation to keep us going in Krishna consciousness, this humility and gratitude, you know, every day. So we always have to keep these points in mind all the time. Does that guy resonate with you guys? I'm not sure if you... So I'm trying to do my very best. So like I said, I've only had 13 hours to prepare for this. You know, Daita told me, you know, at 6:30 last night. Of course, he had all day to tell me, but he waited till, you know, 6:30. But, you know, if, you know, anyway, you know, I'll get my revenge later, you know, if you guys, you know. But that's another topic. So where was I going with this? Oh, God, help me. Okay, cool. Oh, God, this is like a deer in the headlights. Anyway, you guys all get the opportunity to embarrass yourselves, so don't worry. In probably like a couple of weeks or so, so Ladini Shop, everyone. They'll probably kick you out of the temple if you don't come up here. No, I'm just kidding. So anyway, so what does this verse say? What is probably about mentioning that verse? Can you mention something and briefly about that again? Just to give me time to stall so I can think of my next point. Nadinam, Najinam, Nasundadim, something like that. Just up to Nadinam, Nadinam.
So an intelligent man will never aspire to become a devotee to achieve material happiness. That is the test of a devotee. And then Prabhupada quotes the...
Was that the verse?
No, well, the verse is the ultimate goal of all ambitions is to become a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If an intelligent man serves the most dear Lord, he gives himself to his devotees. How can he desire material happiness, which is available even in hell?
That reminds me of a couple of points I actually missed at the beginning of the class. I was mentioning essentially that, you know, it'll be a compliment. Whether someone, you know, accuses me of acting like Jitendra as an insult or a compliment, it doesn't really matter. I all consider it, it's all the same. But one thing I forgot to mention is that one thing I don't want to be associated with Jitendra Prabhu. So, but this is a good thing. Don't worry, it's going in a good direction. You guys may... How do I put this? You may be familiar with, plumber's butt syndrome? the Mooney? So anyways, actually, you guys are smiling and laughing, but there's actually a very valuable lesson in that, believe it or not. So the lesson is, I'll have Daisa read it in Vaishnava K-book, not now, but after I explain it. There's actually a valuable lesson I got from that, actually. So you guys are laughing. The lesson is, I'm not joking. The lesson is that he was actually telling all of us, literally all of us, he was instructing all of us that I'm not a Vaishnava. Don't respect me, because if I'm looking forward to respect, if I think I'm a Vaishnava, then I will always be looking forward to respect and honor from others. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the same thing. Just like, you know, if you're looking forward to the word Vaishnava, that could simply mean PhD, or we shouldn't think that the term monk, there's no prestige in that. Just like Maya Devi, you know, she was attracted to Haridasa Thakur because he was a monk. And that's one of Krishna's six attractive qualities, is that renunciation. So Maya Devi tried to seduce Haridasa Thakur. Why? Because he was pure. So we shouldn't think there's no, she wanted to contaminate him, obviously. So we shouldn't think that, you know, these terms, Vaishnava or monk, there's no prestige in them. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually says that if we think we are Vaishnavas, then we'll be always looking forward to respect from others. I mean, suppose someone offends you. You're like, you have any idea who I am? I am a Vaishnava of the highest caliber. What you did is unforgivable. And so me and my brother would joke all the time like this when we'd be on book distribution. People would ignore us all the time. And so we would always laugh about this and joking. So if we take these so-called offenses against us seriously, then we're in trouble. But if we take them in a spirit of, you know, comedy, then it's actually, you don't look forward to respect. It's actually very hilarious how, you know, Maya influences your mind. And so to verify my point that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if we think we're Vaishnavas, it's mentioned in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's Vaishnava K book. Vaishnava K means, what kind of devotee are you? And he's not talking to, you know, second-hand or third-hand people. He's talking to himself. What kind of devotee are you? Of course, we'll usually say, what kind of devotee are you? Naturally. So he's talking to himself, particularly his mind. And it's an entire poem about basically how to be humble and grateful. So it's a very beautiful poem. I recommend you guys all read it. And then the commentary, His Holiness Jayapataka Maharaj does a commentary for this poem, and in this commentary to the second verse, he quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur in regards to the point that if we think we are Vaishnavas, you know, if we think we're pure and elevated, you know, I'm a monk, I'm a Vaishnava, I'm this, I'm that, then we'll always be looking around for respect from others, always looking for respect. And then if you don't, suppose a child, you know, looks for something, like candy or something, he desires some candy and he doesn't get it, what happens? Help me out, please. Even though it's an obvious question, please help me out. Exactly, he feels bad, cries, he throws a temper tantrum. And what happens when the child gets what he wants? Suppose he consumes all the candy, what happens? Wants more, but something more detrimental to his health. That's true, but I'm looking for something else. What happens if a child consumes a lot of candy? He feels sick, he gets, you know, his teeth rot out or whatever, etc. So whether the child doesn't get what he wants or whether he does get what he wants, the situation is always the same, misery. So until he takes the superior advice of his mother, you know, to free him from this, you know, deluding entanglement of, you know, thinking he knows what he wants, or, you know, this attachment, detachment, this raga dvesha program. Just like in the Gita it says, raga dvesha vimuktai su vishaya indriyash chanan, atma vishya vidyama prasadam adigachati. One who is free from this raga dvesha, this attachment and detachment, can become, contain the prasadam, the mercy of the Lord. So a child, he's attached, and he's also detached. For example, suppose a child eats a lot of candy. So then he becomes sick. So you may call that detachment, but that's actually not detachment. That's just a temporary, zone where he, you know, has to recover until he eats a lot of candy. So this is actually not detachment. This Bhoga Tyaga Raga Dvesha program. So the proper detachment is when he decides to take the proper, you know, advice from his mother that, oh, child, my child, you know, these things not going to bring you happiness. In much the same way, we have to always take shelter of, you know, the devotees. Not that we should, necessarily discriminate between different devotees, because pure devotion cannot be seen. So back to the point of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, can you read that particular purport where he says, if we think we're Vaishnavas, then we'll always be looking forward to respect, so... This is from his, what, Kalyana Kapitsaru?
Kalyana.
I have no idea what that means, but it's from there, so.
If I think I am a Vaishnava, I shall look forward to receiving respect from others. And if the desire for fame and reputation pollutes my heart, certainly I shall go to hell. By giving others the remnants of my food, I shall consider myself superior, and I shall be burdened with the weight of false pride. Therefore, always remaining your surrendered disciple, I shall not accept worship from anyone else. Should I read the next
one? Yeah, the next one. It's pretty much along the same lines.
Another quote from Krishnadas Kaviraj in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Wherever there is a relationship of love of Godhead, its natural symptoms is that the devotee does not think himself a devotee. Instead, he always thinks that he has not even a drop of love for Krishna.
Jai, so if we think we're Vaishnavas or if we think we have a drop of love for Krishna, then we'll always be looking forward to respect people respecting us. And this goes along the point of controlling the senses. When Lakshmi Moni Mataji here and Hanumat Prasad Maharaj, when he was here, and Ramapal Maharaj was here, Ramapal Maharaj made the confirmation that there's this is a very important point. He said there's a direct connection between controlling the senses and not only avoiding Vaishnava Para, but always carrying the glories of devotees, you know, in our life. So there's a direct connection. You know, if we, like for example, the story that I usually like to cite is there was a sage named Sobari Muni, and he was meditating in the ocean for 10,000 years. And so while he was under the ocean, he saw that Garuda, Lord Vishnu's bird carrier, you know, ate some fish. So he was like, ah, oh, you're not a devotee. You eating fish, even though Garuda was a bird. And the lesson I took from this is that had Garuda been at fault, Lord Vishnu, God, would have said something to him if he was actually at fault. So anyway, Sobari Mumi criticized Garuda for eating fish. And so after this, he was meditating in the water for 10,000 years. But however, so he was not surrounded by any opulence. He wasn't surrounded by money. He wasn't surrounded by anything that kind of could attract his senses. I mean, it's the water. It's, you know, you have sharks. Actually, everything will scare you to death probably. So he was surrounded by, you know, all aquatic animals. And so because of this offense, despite not being surrounded by women, you know, the Lord kind of induced him to be attracted to fish, you know, mating. And that's like hilarious, isn't it? That's like funny, like, you know, that like that really like, you know, you're really attracted to that? That's like completely hilarious. And so this is the nature of Vaishnava Parad, is that, you know, we can't see every situation. We can't see who's a devotee or not devotee because pure devotion cannot be seen. And so Sobari Muni criticized, you know, Garuda, and that was the situation. The Lord didn't like that. And so eventually, you know, of course, the story goes is that eventually, even though Sobari Muni fell down, it's a long story short that he desired to get married. He looked old and decrepit, so he used his mystic powers to turn himself into a young, handsome-looking prince. And so he wanted to marry, I think he married several daughters of this king. And so the story goes is that despite enjoying lots of sense gratification, you know, after he made that offense and he got married, and so despite enjoying all this sense gratification he want, the end result is that he was completely unsatisfied. He was like, oh God, let me go meditate again. So after he turned himself into a young prince and became, you know, young, and then had all the, you know, women, all the sense gratification he want, then the same principle goes, it's unsatisfying. I'm sure Roxel probably remembers, but I'm sure you all guys remember this Rolling Stones song. I can't get no satisfaction. So the Rolling Stones, oh, good, you laugh. I got one laugh. Finally, this class is successful. One person laugh. So this is a famous Rolling Stones song that they had all the money in the world, all the women in the world, and all the fame, all the wealth, everything you could imagine. And they're writing a song, you know, I can't get no satisfaction. Why? Because, you know, things temporary and miserable cannot bring happiness to the eternal, indestructible soul. Najayate mriyate vakadachin nayambu twa bhavisavanabu yaha ajonita shashwatwan yampadano nahanyate hanyamane sharire. In chapter 2, the Gita explains that the soul, there's neither birth nor death at any time. It does not come into being, will not come into being, and something to being. I forgot what the last part is. But essentially, That essentially means is that these material things come into being, they go out of being, so how can something that comes into being and goes out to being bring satisfaction to something that doesn't come into being and doesn't go out of being? So that's a central principle we have to always keep in mind. Ooh, the sun is coming out. So we always have to keep these points in mind, is that, you know, these things cannot give us any satisfaction. They're like, actually, these are not my words. Can you read that verse where I quoted Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Can you go to the verse where Bhaktisiddhanta, can you read that verse? It's the second verse. It's interesting what Bhaktisiddhanta compares prestige to. The second verse of Bhaktisiddhanta. It's in the purport was the same one that you quoted from. Yeah, the verse. Read the verse. It's interesting with Bhaktisiddhanta. These are not my words, so I didn't say them at first, because you might accuse me of something. I don't want you to accuse me of.
Such an ambition for a cheap reputation can be compared to the stool of a hog.
Ah, stool. That's what prestige is like. It's stool. And so the realization came to me, it's crap. In other words, prestige is crap. And I'll tell you why it's crap. So suppose someone gives you a gift, you know, it's wrapped very nice, like a Christmas present. Ooh, you're like, ooh, a gift. You know, it's very attractive at first. And then you open it up, and what is it? Crap. And so you will say, this is not a gift, this is a piece of crap. So that's what prestige is like. It's a piece of crap. And why is it a piece of crap? Essentially, in the Nardabhati Sutra, Sutra 27, Narda says, the Lord dislikes the proud, and he shows favor to the humble. And this is reminds me of a similar verse in the Holy Bible, in the book of Luke, chapter 14, verse 11. Jesus says, for whoever exalts himself will be humbled. Oh, yeah, show Marie that video. Oh, you remember that quote. Anyway, Jesus says, for whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. So what does it mean to be exalted is the next question. Like, does it mean to have money, you know, or fame, or like this verse says, you know, women, or for you guys, Justin Bieber, maybe, I don't know. Oh, that was actually a rhetorical question, but I guess you could answer it if you want. I was asking this myself, but I could continue. Okay, cool. So what does it mean to be exalted? So the one thing I appreciated from His Holiness Chandramali Maharaj, I never forgot this answer of what it means to be exalted. So this is one point I've never forgotten, and it's a very essential point that we always have to keep in mind. He said that if we're attached to the results and the prestige that comes along with devotional service, then when the prestige and results go away, then the devotional service also follows it. It goes away too. So in much the same way, you know, we may be doing our, just like Haridasa Thakur was, you know, chanting his rounds, you know. You know, he developed some prestige. Everyone was honoring him. You know, the Shankazi got envious. He was developing some prestige. Maya Devi was attracted to him, you know, tried to throw him off his game. And so suppose, you know, Haridasa Thakur was thinking, suppose Maya went away, or all the women, all the fame went away, and he's chanting his rounds. What if he's thinking, you know, what is the use of these rounds? Nobody's looking. You know, the women are not looking. I'm not getting any fame and prestige. So essentially what it means to be exalted is that what it means to be exalted is that we're not dependent on money, women, or fame, or Justin Bieber, you know, for happiness for the women. So I like to mention these points. Our happiness, our devotion is not dependent on these things. So even when these things, sometimes they come, we see spiritual leaders, they get all these things. They get money, you know, women are attracted to them, they get fame. And sometimes when you see that these things go away, somebody may, criticize them, or, you know, lie about them or accuse them of things that they didn't do, and all of a sudden these opulence are taken away. And so, but does that mean his devotion goes away? No, well, it shouldn't mean, but usually that's the case. So what it means to be exalted is that whether you get, you know, some type of material opulence or whether you don't get it, your devotion for God never goes away. Premanjana Charita Bhati Vilochanena Santa Sadaiva Hridayeshu Vilokayansi. One can see Krishna everywhere. It doesn't matter whether one has opulence or doesn't have opulence. When one is endowed with this prema, this devotion, or not even prema, just a little humility bhakti, a little gratitude bhakti, you know, then you could start to see the mercy of the Lord everywhere, and your devotion is not dependent on these material opulence. If they go away, like, how come people are not watching me? This devotion, this chanting is useless, you know. I'm not getting no prestige. So essentially, that's what it means to be exalted. So there's more I could say about these points. I had a lot of other points, but I would like to take this opportunity, otherwise I'll end class, to, if anyone would like to contribute to this discussion, especially in regards to some gratitude points, somebody that essentially played key roles in your life. Today's another opportunity. Remember my last point, you guys could all die. Wake up, people. You guys could die tomorrow. So here's the opportunity to offer your, you know, gratitudes to somebody that's played the key role in your life. Jiva, Jago, you know, please wake up. please, you know, please at least don't sleep. At least keep your eyelids open or something. So here's another opportunity to offer, you know, your gratitude and respects to somebody that's played key roles in your life. Itachi, you want to contribute? No? Anybody? Justin? Ninosh? All right, thank you. All right, I'll just start listing names until someone says something.
All right. Hare Krishna. Thank you for class. I'll take the opportunity to glorify Acharya Nishtha. He's always just super focused, super steady. Just his presence. Now that he's in India now, I really feel his presence. Like how much it affects me when he's here. Like you don't really notice it, but someone who's always focused like that, it just keeps you focused, especially me, because he is the first devotee that I ever met, and he's like guided me. So just his presence alone, like, keeps me in line, and like makes me want to be determined and focused. So it's really awesome that he's so determined and so steady in his consciousness. Also, I'll glorify you, Jai Baldev.
Try to make me fall down. There's a nice story. Actually, you can't make me fall down. I'm already falling. No, just because I'm 2 inches up on another. Anyway,
you're not
going to
let me glorify you?
Huh?
I'm not going to.
I'll tell you a nice story about that. There's actually scriptural injunctions for this. Me and Atasha actually probably was joking about this before. It's a nice story. He said, if you want to sabotage someone, especially for people who are not deserving of it, you know, people who are proud, then glorify them all the time. Oh, Prabhu, you're so nice. You're so wonderful. You know, everything you do is like completely, you know, elevated, man. So that's a good way to, you know, sabotage someone. And Atasha made the point, and I agree with him, when he's teaching his Murdunga classes, he'll say a particular student, they're doing well, you know, they're learning Murdunga. And so they're playing, you know, the whole time. And then Atasha Krishna, Prabhu, and I've had this experience when I'm teaching people, he'll compliment them, and then they start messing up and forget the whole thing. And they'll completely, you know, forget everything about it. They was like, what's the mantra again? And so there's actually a story in this regard in a Bhagavatam. I think we passed it up. It was maybe a few sessions ago, where Indra, I forgot for what particular reason, he was being glorified by all the demigods. Maybe Karuna Nidhi knows this story. He was being glorified by, you know, all the, you know, sages, all the demigods, for whatever particular reason. I don't remember particular pastime. But he was so intoxicated by this glorification that when his spiritual master, Brihaspati, walked in, you know, he just looked, glanced at him and, you know, didn't offer respects. He just like, oh, you know, whatever. Then he just continued to accept the glorification, you know. So I'm joking, of course, but these principles are, we should keep these in mind all the time, too. They're actually very funny, but I'd just like to mention that in regard. And one last point I wanted to mention of regards to Acharya Nishtha Prabhu. I'll end right here unless anyone else has anything to say. I kind of appreciate his service. I was explaining to him one particular incident that happened with me and him some few years ago, probably like 3-4 years ago. And this is when he was wearing white. You probably guys have a hard to imagine that he was actually wearing white before, right? Before he was initiated. So anyways, me and Acharya Nishtha, we went by ourselves to one particular university. I think it was UIC or Northeastern. And So we did kirtan on campus. You know, we just walked in, you know, walked in the courtyard. You know, there was no security, you know, available. So we just walked in the university and set up a whole bunch of books and started to do kirtan. And so so at the end of the kirtan, I expressed my gratitude from Acharya. At the end of the kirtan, at this particular time, Acharya only been in the Krishna consciousness movement for maybe like over a year or so. And I was in for maybe like 5 years. I'm not sure, something like that. So at the end of the kirtan, Acharya Nishtha Prabhu, he asked me, you know, what books are you reading, Prabhu? And I said, what Prabhupada's books are you? I was like, The Science of Self-Realization? You buy that? So, you know, at the time, I didn't have any taste because, you know, I was influenced by, you know, everyone goes through depression. I was influenced by depression and the moles or whatever. So at the time, I expressed this to him recently, actually. So I was like, at the time, I was thinking, this devotee is puffed up. You know, how dare he, you know, accuses me of not reading Prabhupada's books when he knows I'm not. How dare he? So then I was expressing my gratitude because we always have to, in retrospect, we may not be able to appreciate, you know, devotees, whether they're proud or not, it doesn't matter. You know, we can always take a lesson from whether a devotee is proud or not. We can always express our gratitude. So sometimes we may, you know, be upset at devotees. They may criticize us. You know, they're proud. Even if they are proud, you know, that's good for our consciousness. So we should always take things in a good way, in a good spirit. You know, and so in retrospect, I express my gratitude to Acharya Nishtha in that regard because my brother always did the same things to me, but my brother did the same thing in a harsher way. He would embarrass me in front of people, and I was like mad. I was going like this, but I couldn't say anything. My face was tranquil, but my brother embarrassed me, like, what books are you reading, Prabhu? You know, otherwise your mind would be, you know, carried away by the moles and depression or whatever. And so I was always mad at my brother. But of course, in retrospect, I knew it was good for me, you know. But it's always good to keep these points in mind and always feel humble and grateful for the devotees. Even if they're proud devotees, it doesn't matter. We should always take in a good spirit. So I would like to end the class on that note. And hopefully you guys get the opportunity to embarrass yourself and not just me. So karma's coming for you, in other words. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Okay, and we have our brahmacharya meeting downstairs.